Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. Hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. Lots of stuff has been going on along the USC football program with the spring football for 2021. Wrapping up on Friday, the NFL draft also over the weekend. Five Trojans selected. We're going to talk about all of that with the coach, Harvey Hyde, plus a new transfer that just was announced this morning. It's Monday morning. We're recording the podcast, but we got some breaking news. We'll talk about that too. But with the coach, Harvey Hyde, you can follow him on Twitter at Coach Harvey Hyde or go to his website, HarveyHyde.com, to see all of his content. If you have questions or comments for our show, please email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. We'd love to hear from you, especially during this offseason. Any kind of topics you want us to talk about, we will be able to do that. You can also leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text, and the number is the same, 424-254-9141. We got a voicemail to play for you today. There's also a place you can review our podcast if you download the podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can follow us there on the Peristyle Podcast. Leave us a five-star rating. Any kind of comments or suggestions on there really helps us to grow the show. But leave that little five stars. That helps us a lot, helps us out a lot, and we do appreciate it very much. And we always appreciate having the coach on the show. Coach, how you doing, sir? Hope you had a wonderful weekend.
Oh, Ryan, it was great. I'll tell you, it was great. The Kentucky Derby and all the events going on. You got a lot of college football on Sunday now. That was wonderful too. It's football year round. And spring practice is getting wrapped up at a lot of schools. And, you know, I'm in a good mood. Summer's coming, and we'll see what's going to happen this season. It sure seems like the season is getting here quickly. It just seems like it was over with. And here we are getting ready to talk football, and publications will be out shortly. So let's keep it rolling.
We will keep it rolling. Yeah, it's funny. This is going to be a sort of a slow May month, and I talked about this on our Tunnel Vision show last night. You can check that out. We have the as podcast forum now too, but with the draft wrapping up, with spring football wrapping up, usually May sort of focuses on recruiting. It's the evaluation period. Well, the dead period goes all the way to June, so there's going to be a lot of recruiting going on in June. If you're a recruiting fan, tons of official visits. They're going to be cramming everything in. All these players – it's been over a year since they've been able to visit campuses officially. So that's going to be ramping up big time, but you're not going to get the same sort of stuff that you would get in May. And, you know, we here in California, we had the high school season that ended fairly recently too. So May can be kind of a dead month. So definitely send us your questions, your comments, feedback, anything you want, any kind of topics you'd like us to talk about, because probably not going to be a whole lot of football stuff going on for the next few weeks, Coach, but we'll get through it. But on the other side too, it's like, wow, it seems like the season's getting here quickly. It's so much to be back on an almost normal schedule as opposed to last year where you were just like in this desert of nothingness going on. You didn't even know if a season was going to happen. It just feels like everything's happening faster now, Coach.
It really does. And I'm not sure when fall camp opens up, but it's normally the early part of August, normally in months before their first game, September the 4th. So we'll be back in fall camp here in a couple of months. So we've got a lot of football to talk about. We're recruiting going on. So as I always say, football never goes away.
It never does, Coach. Yeah, August 6th, I believe, is the tentative date for the start of USC fall camp. And just to let everyone know, if you are not a subscriber to USCFootball.com, we are ending our NFL draft sale, 50% off a VIP membership. Or if you just want to put down a buck, you can get access for the next month. So go check it out. If you're not a member already, you should be, but jump on there. They got a great sale going on, but it ends midnight on Monday. So try to jump in there. I'm going to start off because we had some breaking news this morning. Another transfer from the University of Texas. This is Malcolm Epps. So he's a tight end. We've heard some, you know, he might be able to play like that big receiver role at USC. Looked like more of a pass catcher than a blocker, but he's the third Longhorn actually to make the jump from the NCAA transfer portal this offseason. So obviously the Todd Orlando, Craig Nivar, all the, you know, Brian Carrington, like the connections from the University of Texas on the staff and support staff have kind of paved the way for bringing in some extra players. You get a safety, you get a defensive lineman. You get a safety, you get a running back, and now you get a tight end. But thoughts, Coach, on Malcolm Epps coming over to USC?
Well, it's always great to get great players, and from the state of Texas, I don't know exactly what Texas had on their team. They didn't have a lot of players drafted this year. But the only thing we're missing is Steve Sarkisian. I just wondered if he would go in the portal, and if he goes in the portal, if USC might bring him over, because there's been so many Texas players now on the roster at USC. I somewhat question that if I'm a California kid or a California coach. A high school coach, I would say, well, maybe they're getting all their players from Texas now. Not that I don't want great talent. And, if you're bringing in a tight end at 6'6", 260 pounds, that plays on the line of scrimmage, and the poor guy that plays against him being a linebacker or whatever, and the poor guy that has to tackle him when he's in the seam or running a drag or corner route or quick out or whatever, I feel sorry for him. I'd be really in favor of it. But again, it's another receiver type of a big receiver, and I think big receivers are great. But I think also, when you look at everything, you say, is it a receiver you need, or is it something else that you need to take you to the next level? I mean, you can have all the receivers in the world, but if you can't pass block or run the football, you're not going to move the ball, and your quarterback's going to be looking straight up at the sky and trying to hit the moon. And that really doesn't happen. So, I'm always excited about getting great players, but I look at the big picture of what the real needs are of the football program, and I don't think that was one of the big needs when you have Brew McCoy and Ford. I tell you, Brew McCoy is going to be a superstar. And what about the other receivers that you already have on the team that had a pretty good spring? What do you tell them? You tell them they're not good enough? I mean, I really don't know how you explain it, and I don't know why you need it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Coach. You want to, accumulate talent, and it's a weird roster year because of the COVID stuff, and if you have some openings, you can bring some guys in. It's this huge. You have this huge freshman class. If you can bring in some more veteran guys, it's hard to kind of fill in the rest of the roster, and you can do that with the transfer portal. The wide receiver depth just wasn't that good this spring. It's usually better than what it has been. So I get it. But we just don't even know the kind of role that a tight end would be playing in this offense. We heard from Graham Harrell they were going to probably use some, or I think it was from Clay Helton, some different kind of formations. There's some possibilities there. But, I almost feel like you're kind of relying a little bit too much on this Texas connection with the guys that are on the staff right now. It's certainly there. It's something you want to utilize. But, I mean, the third guy transferring from Texas just in this offseason seems a little much.
Well, I agree with you because, see, these Texas coaches, don't get me wrong, they don't know the California coaches, okay? They know the Texas high school coaches and where they've been recruiting. So, obviously, that's where their contacts are, and that's where they're going to go to try to get players. But California high school coaches, they like to network with the coaches that they know, that circulate through their schools, that they sit and have lunch with or drink with, talk on the off season, all of the above. And I think you've got to have that network. Now, Oregon comes down here and does a good job with that. Obviously, Williams has done a good job with that. And, I just think that If you're a California university, you've got to be able to have networking throughout the state of California everywhere to be able to attract the top prospects. Here you have the three top quarterbacks in the country next year. I'm not talking about draft choices or Heisman Trophy winners. You got a starter at Clemson from St. John Bosco. You got a starter that was in the portal from USC at Georgia. And then you've got Bryce Young at Alabama. I mean, how does that look? I mean, don't get me wrong. Why wouldn't they want to come to USC? Or why wouldn't they want to come? There's a reason. So I think that there's something lacking there where you can't attract those type of players at USC, because the football tradition at USC is every bit of what they are at those three universities, and for a longer period of time. Now, Alabama, well, I got to say, they've been there a long time, because John McKay and Bear Bryant were the best of friends. But we can't let, I say we, the state of California or USC, can't allow that type of talent, not just quarterbacks, but any position, leave the state.
Yeah, it's definitely been a talent drain here on the West Coast, and it starts in, you know, it starts with USC. You have to have a strong USC football program. When Pete Carroll got that rolling, he made it cool to stay on the West Coast. Not as cool to stay on the West Coast right now. So you're seeing a lot of guys, you know, from the draft. And maybe we'll go to the draft first before we talk about, you know, USC spring football, since you mentioned some of that stuff. I'll give a quick recap of where the USC players went. Now, remember, everyone was eligible to come back. So any, you know, there's seniors still on the roster that didn't, you know, just move off because they get that extra year because of the COVID shutdown. But there were seven players that decided to leave and try for the NFL. They were all invited to that virtual combine. And five of those players were drafted, two signed as undrafted free agents. One first rounder, Elijah Vera Tucker, the number 14 pick to the New York Jets. The Jets actually traded up. And the Raiders took an offensive tackle, Alex Leatherwood from Alabama. A lot of people thought was a reach. And there were definitely some rumors that they wanted Elijah Vera Tucker, but the Jets jumped up and got him. So second year in a row, USC's had an offensive lineman selected in the first round. I think that's all good. The problem was no one else was selected until day three of the draft. So the very first pick of the fourth round, Jay Tufele, remember him? He opted out of the 2020 season, just like Elijah Vera Tucker did, but Vera Tucker came back. He went in the very first pick of the fourth round, is 106th pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So he goes with Urban Meyer. So that should be very interesting for sure. A few picks later, the 112th pick in the fourth round, Amon-Ra St. Brown, goes to the Detroit Lions. And he got Jared Goff trying to figure out what's going to go on up there. So that's where Amon-Ra St. Brown ended up. In the fifth round, the 180th pick, safety Talanoa Hufanga. He's staying on the West Coast, San Francisco 49ers. So played his high school football, Pacific Northwest, LA for college, and he's going to stay in California, San Francisco 49ers for the All-American from USC, Talanoa Hufanga. All right, then in the sixth round, 189th pick, there's actually just nine picks later, Marlon Tuipulotu, I thought, made himself some money at least the first couple of games of the 2020 season, did not opt out. Showed up and just had some really good tape, I think, from those games. He goes to the Philadelphia Eagles. And then two names that weren't called, Elijah Griffin, the cornerback, he signed with the Buffalo Bills. Could it be, Robbie Nicole Coleman? Like, he was signed an undrafted free agent there and made it, had a long NFL career with the Bills. And so we'll see if OG Elijah Griffin can do that too. And then Tyler Vaughns. He ends up going to the Indianapolis Colts, and he gets reunited with his former teammate, Michael Pittman. And they got a new quarterback, too, to throw to him. Both receivers get new quarterbacks. Carson Wentz will be the new guy in Indy. So, sorry that was a mouthful, everyone, but just give you guys a recap of where everyone ended up. Coach, thoughts on any of those guys, or if you want to give thoughts overall, however you want to do it.
Well, let's start with this. You have two offensive linemen that went in the first round. And they played next to each other, correct me if I'm wrong, 2 years ago. Here you have two number one draft choices, okay? And for some reason, you can't run the football. Now, is it the players? Or is it the NFL evaluating these players wrong? The NFL looks at all these players a different way than we look at them. We talk about them every day. We don't see every single player throughout the country and evaluate them against them. And they obviously thought that these two players, Jackson and Tucker, are pretty good football players. So I don't know if it's the football coach itself I don't think it's the football coach itself that's coaching the offensive line. I might look at it and say it might be the system. And that's something I've spoken about now for the last 3 or 4 years as far as what you do and how you try to move the football with different types of things you implement into your football program as far as on your offensive side of the football to be able to diversify and be able to carry the load as far as if you heard every one of the analysts on all the networks talking, play action pass is Justin Fields' success. Play action pass is McCoy's success. Every one of these guys you hear talking about how important the running game is to the passing game. And, you know, I don't know how long I can keep saying it, because I know all of you are sick of me hearing me talk about this, but you ask me and I tell you. So how can you have two number one draft choices on the offensive line and you can't run the football? My goodness. I mean, that's almost embarrassing to say. So it must be the system. So we'll see what happens this year with a new offensive line coach and see if he can make it better. But if it's the same system, I don't know if he can make it better. So that's where I look at that as far as those guys have been evaluated by guys that evaluate thousands of players every year, thousands on every level. And they both went in the first round. Then you look at the other players and you say, I'm sorry that Jay didn't have the opportunity of playing, but he had personal reasons that he couldn't play. But I think it certainly would have helped him. I'm glad that he did have an opportunity to get drafted and play. He's a good kid. And I want to see everybody have the opportunity of fulfilling their dreams, which is playing on a Sunday. And these other guys were evaluated by the NFL scouts, and they took them exactly where they evaluated them. And if you people watch the same film, not films, but the same highlights every time somebody got drafted, you saw some great talent. Great talent. And I watch hours of that show, hours to evaluate the talent. You don't have to be at USC, but there's great talent out there as far as offense and defense, linemen and receivers. And you can see where they're taken and who they are, names you never heard of before. But I think that those guys, I'm glad that they got drafted, and I think that they have an opportunity of making the team because of the position they play. When you draft someone, you have a need, and I think if you go to camp and you don't get injured and you play hard and you're in great shape, you have a chance to make the team, okay? Now, as far as St. Brown, I thought he's a great player. He had a great workout. But he came out the wrong year. You can't come out a year when it's the greatest receiver group of guys ever. Yet I realize his confidence and so on. And I think he has the ability to play in the NFL, but he could have gone a lot higher if you're looking at the dollar signs if he'd have stuck around. And that's exactly my feeling on him. He got drafted, but if he wasn't in such a hurry and he evaluates the receivers that are coming out and what his competition is, you got to make a business decision. His business decision was to sell the car. So he went out there and he's got drafted and he has a chance now to make the Detroit Lions. Now you look at the free agency guys that signed. You look at Griffin. I just think Griffin could have stayed. He was in too much of a hurry.
Yeah.
He needed to mature. He needed to get stronger. He needed to play more. He just, you know, he was in a hurry, too much of a hurry to get to the NFL instead of letting it happen. You know, it takes 9 months to have a baby normally, you know. So let it happen. Don't come out so early. But he was reading all the hypes and everything, or somebody was telling him or whatever, and playing college football wasn't good enough. So he has the challenges now, and they're going to be tough challenges. They really are, to go against great people and try to tackle backs that weigh 220 pounds that run 4.4, 4.5, some bigger. Now, also Tyler Vaughn. I think Tyler Vaughn is a great kid. He came out of Bishop Vermont as a 5-star, I believe. And, you know, some kids just mature faster than others. So he's had a great career at USC. He was a 6'2 receiver with great hands that made great plays and was a leader. But you've got to be able to run as a receiver. And if he had any shortcoming at all, if he did, I'm not talking about his personality or winner, it was his top speed. You've got to be able to go deep, and you can only have so many route guys on your football team. Otherwise, they just eliminate you. They just play man on you, and you're out of the game, okay? And that doesn't help them, you offensively at all, because they can double up on other people. So I think he'll have a challenge as far as making the team. I think Mike Pittman there is that type of player. And I don't know if they can have two of those. Maybe he'll be able to get on some other team later on and get picked up. But that's the way I evaluate them. They all had their choices. They all had their chances. They all made their own decisions. So I want to wish them all the best of luck, because everybody has a dream of playing on Sunday. But what happened was someone else evaluating the players, not us. Someone who sees thousands of players during the year. And my main point goes back to saying, how can you have two number one round draft choices and you can't run the football?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And that people have brought that up on Twitter quite a bit, Coach, and hard to argue with them, because that certainly was an issue for USC. So, but wish everyone the best of luck making their teams. And we'll see where those guys will try to follow their careers and see where they go as progens, as the guys, you know, going on to their pro careers from USC. All right. Let's one more topic before we jump into questions. We got to wrap up spring football. It ended on Friday. So I went out to practice, Coach. It was up, you know, we got to check it up on the Aquatic Center. It was a shorter practice, the last one that we got to see. It was only about an hour. They did some 7-on-7 stuff. You know, they had full pads on, which we didn't think they were going to do, because we thought you could only have 8 practices with pads. And I think Shotgun had counted 8 already, but they did have a full pads practice. When it came to the team periods, and that's basically what they ran, and they ran some specialty stuff. A lot of backups were in. You had some of the veterans almost acting like coaches on there. So sort of like a, you know, final wrap-up practice. It was like maybe a senior skip day kind of thing going on. But we got to see Jackson Dart and Miller Moss run stuff. They didn't have Keaton Slovis go out there with the team stuff. Defense dominated all the drills that I had seen. Miller Moss had some success. Dart really didn't. So it was more of a – Moss looked better to me on those final few periods than Dart. But that, you know, they blew the horn. It was a good defensive stop. They blew the horn 3 times ending practice, and it was like, wow, that was pretty quick. But overall, I wanted to get your thoughts on spring football, maybe the last couple of weeks since we saw, you know, the spring showcase, and you know, tell me what you think. For me, just real quick, I thought it was a lot more physical than what we've seen in the past. I thought they, you know, accomplished a lot. I liked the way they kind of set the tone, and probably started with Todd Orlando and what they wanted to do as far as physicality goes. But yeah, I mean, spring football, you could certainly do some things better, but I think it was a better group of practices than what we've seen in the past. But I wanted to get your thoughts, Coach.
Well, I quit going after the spring showcase because I think it's anticlimactic, and I think the kids feel the same way. I think they wasted the last 2 weeks. I mean, how do you have that without coming back? You should be scrimmaging every Saturday. Then after this scrimmage, they should have had this Saturday after, I don't know, 100-play scrimmage, have a big barbecue with the players and their families and so on, and celebrate that I made it. I made it through spring practice. It was grueling and tough, but I made it. I mean, how can you have call it off? I mean, you can't call off practice. This is when you make the time. This is when the team, this is when you get ready to play a football game. How can you waste them? And I think it was totally wasted the last 2 weeks. I agree with you as far as the practices the first 2 weeks. I thought they were put together. They had more inside, outside, and more type of hitting drills that I thought that was really good. But to waste your last 2 weeks of football practice, mentally you lose them too. Remember, you've got to have the mental attitude. You've got to have the kids, it's not over till it's over. The game isn't over. until the gun goes off. So what are you going to do, quit at halftime? Hell no. You got to keep going. And, you know, all these players lying on the sideline that were hurt, and players coaching players. What is this, a playground in a mental program? I mean, players got their role and coaches have got their role. It's not a circus out there. It's business when you go out there. And that's my opinion. All of you out there might disagree with me. But I tell you, I don't waste time when it's practice time. And I take advantage every day and every way. You get better, better, and better. You're never good enough. And I just thought that when they said that was their last big showcase, I quit going. Because that's the way I felt, and I'm sure that everybody else felt the same way. Now, you have to go out there, and your team has to go out there, but you got to put up all the things of what you saw out there, which I understand. But unless they're going to be getting better, and I'm going to see some progress, then I'm not going to waste my time. And not that I don't love football, but how do you quit spring practice halfway through? Or a little past halfway through?
Yeah.
Wasted time, wasted energy. You might as well just quit after the scrimmage.
Yeah, you know, I thought there were some good practices afterwards. The problem was, and I get the mental approach, Coach, where, hey, we had our game. Now it's sort of like, what does this matter? Like, that's, I think you run the risk of losing some of the players mentally. But I think that combined with there was a bunch of injuries. I think Shotgun counted like 40 guys that weren't out there. Then they weren't all injured. There were some guys that transferred out. But there was a lot of dudes that were, you know, not available. And if it was a game week, maybe they would have been. But it's like, you know, the week, like you said, the week after the spring showcase, I'm nicked up. I'm not going to go out there. So I get it. I think there's some aspect to it. I would rather see the spring game, you know, end things. And that's where you sort of build up to. But the fact that USC got all those injuries when they had the spring game, they had the spring game when they did, probably got a lot better for spring, you know, spring showcase because they had less guys injured than they did later on. But, you know, that's, I don't know if they would have been able to play, you know, with through those injuries or not. I think the good news is there were, you know, there was three major injuries that the players are going to be out for the season, but everyone else should be, you know, there's a bunch of other injuries, but they should all be back for the fall. But, you know, in general, I don't know, Coach. I mean, I would take more positives away from this just knowing that, like, they needed to tackle more. I mean, they were live tackling in the final practice. Even though it was a short practice, like, they were tackling. We didn't see that kind of stuff before. So at least there are some positives of how we've done it before versus now.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. You know, injuries are concerned. But, you know, you can step off a curb and twist your ankle. And, you know, this game is a tough game. And to have 40 people not practicing, I'd have canceled spring. I'd have said, okay, we're taking a week off until we get everybody well. I mean, when everybody can practice, we'll come back and we'll start the remainder of our spring. You can't have 40 guys standing on the sideline. That's a joke. I mean, really. I mean, think about it for a minute. I mean, this is your future and what you got to do. And I apologize to all the parents out there that think I'm a brutal bad guy. But when you don't get those W's in the fall, you'll be yelling and screaming about everything. And the only way your body becomes accustomed to hurting is by playing football all the time. And you notice that you're going to live through it. By gosh, I lived through this. My arm was sore, but I lived through this. I limped through this. I got through this. Your dreams of playing in the NFL aren't over. So, you know, if I had 40 guys in the sideline, I'd have said, well, how many days we have to get them well again? 10 days. All right. No spring practice for 10 days. Get back in the weight room, get rehabbed, and we'll come out here and start again. That's me.
Yeah.
That's me, okay? I'm not going to waste time, okay? I want to get something out of this. And that's why 40 guys injured is unheard of anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, they were all injured. There were some guys that had transferred out, but there's just 40 players missing. A lot of them were injuries, according to Shotgun's count. But
well, whatever the count is, I don't care.
There was a lot of dudes out early.
I'd be embarrassed.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back and answer some questions. But, yeah, a lot of newsy stuff we had to get to. But we'll be back in a minute and answer your questions.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we are back on the Peristyle Podcast. Coach, let's start with a voicemail. I'll play it for you.
Right. This is Lee from the Bay Area. Question for you. You guys are talking about Voorhees playing tackle on potential tackle on your on the line. So my question is for the coach. Didn't the coach say a couple years ago that he thought Voorhees could be a tackle? I could be wrong, but maybe just check your archives. Thank you.
Could you help me out with that, Ryan? I want to make sure I answer his question properly.
Yeah, so we talked about on the shows, it might have been on Tunnel Vision, but Andrew Voorhees ended up, they did a draft in the spring showcase, and Voorhees ended up being the left tackle for one of the teams. And then the last couple of weeks, they did a little more mixing and matching on the offensive line. There were some guys injured, and we got to see Voorhees again. I think Shotgun went through his film of the spring game and when we watched him in practice and really liked the way Voorhees was playing left tackle. So that's a potential move that could be made. And the caller was just saying that he remembers you saying that from a couple of years ago, you thought Voorhees could be a tackle, but he wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Right. I watched him in the spring, and I thought that showcase, he did a good job at left tackle. Now, I didn't watch him every single play, but I wanted to get a good look at him seeing play tackle, and I thought he did a pretty good job. So, yeah, I think he can play that tackle, depending on what their other combinations could be on the techniques and also how these other kids come along. Yeah, I thought he did a good job there. Just it depends on – you got to have your five best players on the field, okay? Whether you move a center to guard or you move McKenzie inside and you play Monahan at the other tackle, you got to have people that can play and the ones that you believe in, the ones that will bleed for you, the ones who will get that extra yard for you, the one that will play 100% and not watch the play but get to the play. You've got to be able to say, if you want to watch it like the 40 guys that are injured, buy a ticket to practice, you know? This is what you have to look and then decide who those people are, and that's what coaches are for, and then put them together as a unit and then keep them in that unit. Coaches are supposed to make decisions, and you're getting paid to make these decisions and then coach them up. So to become a better coach, you got to get better players, especially in the offensive line and defensive line type of positions. So to become a great coach, recruit great players, and then get them together, make them believe, put them in the right position and combinations, and go with it. And I think that's basically my feeling on Voorhees. I think he could play left tackle.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Clay Helton talked about all the positions essentially being open right now, and they're going to, we saw like a set pretty much group for the first few weeks. then they mix things up a little bit. But I think Voorhees did himself a favor, and that's going to be something for Clay Maguire to think about. I've talked about this coach. This is where, you know, you hire a new offensive line coach. He's sort of evaluating what's going on. You have tape now of like what the projected starting five would be with Cortland Ford out there at left tackle. But outside of Brett Nealon, I mean, they could move anybody. McKenzie could move to guard. Voorhees could move from guard to tackle. You know, you might see Jonah Monheim run out and play right tackle for the Trojans. You could see Justin Dietich slide over and play guard. I think there's a lot of options. Is this, you know, you have this new offensive line coach, probably work with Clay Helton. You know, you're an offensive line guy. Is that something they're just going to be doing this offseason, evaluating what they saw in spring practice and then going into the summer where the player run practices are going on? And then, of course, fall camp, having an idea of, I think this is what our starting offensive line is going to be. Let's start off looking at that and then move forward.
Well, let me tell you, if you don't know who your players are right now, and you don't know what your potential starting group is right now, you're in trouble, okay? You know who can play. You know who needs to be redshirted. You know who your best five are or six are. You maybe have seven players, okay, that you rotate, seven. So if someone goes down, this guy goes in and one guy moves over. You don't get, in the fall, equal opportunity. It's not equal opportunity time in the fall. It's time to prepare for football season. It's time to get your team unified as a unit, the pride in its unit, and go from there. If you don't know who your starting offensive best players are right now, you're in trouble, okay? So when you say every position is open for God, who are you kidding, coach? Every position isn't open. I mean, you say that and you mislead everybody, including the players, but the players know that's not the truth. Every position might be open, but they know they don't have a shot at it. They know the guy in front of them's better. They have to wait their turn. And in some cases, you've made a mistake, and a kid might never play. But if you don't know your top seven or eight offensive linemen right now, you're in deep you-know-what. Because you got to know exactly what you're going to do when fall camp starts. It's not equal everything. It's getting ready to beat football teams, okay? And form the pride and the togetherness and things that when you need it, you've got it. So that's just my opinion, humble opinion.
Coach's humble opinion. All right. Well, thanks for that question. We got a couple emails. This is from Jack from Arizona. He says, I've been watching all the recruiting at USC football and cannot help to see certain needs are not being addressed. Everyone says that the offensive line is where the Trojans need the most help. All we see is defensive backs, defensive line, wide receivers, and quarterbacks being recruited. I am reading between the lines here, but it appears that the USC mindset is this. We can score between 28 and 38 points on most everyone. If we can create a defense that holds our opponents to 21 or less, we will be winners of the West. Do you agree?
Well, you know, that's if you can keep your quarterback alive. You know, when you throw the ball that many times and, you know, and you don't have things off of your passing game, like in the spring, I think I saw a couple of draws and one of them worked pretty good. And then you run a fake draw pass where, first of all, you've got to get your linebackers to react to the draw so they believe you're going to run it. So the linebackers come up, it's like a play action pass, and you throw the football, fine. But you've got to be able to have things that the passing game works around as far as concerned to the running game that makes it a lot easier as far as spreading the field and getting it done. And I just question that because I don't know just what the overall philosophy is offensively. And I tell you, when you don't do that, it didn't teach good habits at all to the defense. When the quarterback doesn't carry the football or attempt to carry the football in the spring, and I'm not saying make it live on him, but to teach him to continue with the read or the options or the bootlegs and run out there and hold the backside and know down and distance on when to slide or when to get out of bounds so you know that you move the sticks. What are you practicing? I mean, you've got to make it like the real thing, that what this kid has got to make decisions on during the game. So, you know, and you don't really, I didn't see any type of improvement on misdirection plays or jet sweeps or counters or any of that stuff. Maybe they're saving it. But what do you save it for? There's no secrets in football. What secrets are there in football? There's no secrets. I mean, you know, you get ready the week before or a week and a half before the game, and you put everything in, sometimes it's better they know you have that play, but then they wait for it, and they can't get into the other play and stop it. So I don't even know what the question was any longer, okay?
That's the best one, Coach. I love those about your recruiting on the offensive line. USC does have, I believe, 19 scholarship offensive linemen right now, so it's not like the number, they haven't recruited. It's not like they avoided recruiting the offensive line. They just haven't landed the five-star kind of guys that you would expect from USC. So there's still bodies there. But Jack from Arizona wanted to know about, you know, recruiting on the offensive line. So,
well, you got to get out and you know, you got to get some guys that you might have to go out of state or to get these guys or whatever. You got to recruit them, but you got to get them. And sometimes you've got to take a guy that's a defensive player and move him on offense because he's more angry, but he's a great athlete, and you can turn him into an offensive tackle or a tight end or something, bulk him up, redshirt him, and he'll become a great player. But you got to have some guys that are angry and athletic and playing on the offensive side of the line that can pull and move and do different things. And, you know, you just can't recruit pass blockers. And a couple of players that they've recruited as far as coming in, I'm not going to mention names, are basically guys that just lean on you, okay? But they're so big, they just lean on you. And the defensive guy really can't see around them, but they're not coming off the football, and they do their best. They're working hard, these kids. Don't get me wrong. But are they the kids that are going to win you Pac-12 championships, national championships, and play in the same league as what people are talking about playing in? You've got to find those guys, and you've got to have recruiters that do it. You got to have guys that understand it's not me, it's who I'm coaching. And until people believe that, you're not going to be a good coach. Yeah. You're going to be a good coach is when you've got a great group of kids to coach. So if people don't believe that and they don't get out and get after it, and you don't have kids making the decision as far as in certain positions, then you're going to lose, and you're not going to be around long.
Yeah. All right, we got one last question for you, Coach. This is from Justin in downtown Los Angeles about competition. He says, "Hey, Ryan, when Michael Pittman was being recruited, I remember him saying there was, quote, too much seniority going on at USC." And, oh, I'm sorry. He's talking about Micah Pittman, the younger brother of Michael Pittman. My apologies. So when Micah Pittman, who ended up going to Oregon, he said there was, quote, too much seniority going on at USC, and then chose Oregon. I agreed with Micah's statement at the time. It seems like Clay Helton favored his, quote, seniors like the love of his life, Toa Lobendon. Do you get the sense that the seniority system has been replaced by one with true competition for starting spots, a la Pete Carroll? Do you still get the sense that certain players are favored? Thanks from Justin.
Well, I hope not. I used to tell my team before spring recruiting and before spring practice, I'd have a team meeting. And I would tell them and say, guys, I'm going recruiting. And I love to recruit, okay? And in the spring, head coaches could go and recruit then, okay? Now they don't go out because they want to play golf, okay? So I used to say, I want you guys to know that I'm trying to recruit people to put every single one of you on the bench. Every single one of you on the bench. And they'd look at me like, this guy's nuts. I'd say, because if I can do that, then we got better. We're going to be better next year, because I understand it's you guys that make us win with us helping you, okay? And I said, but you know whose fault it is? if you allow me to do that, it's yours. But you already have a head start. You know our offense. You know our off-season conditioning. You know exactly what it is. And if I can go out and bring somebody else in to put you on the bench, then it's not my fault. It's your fault. Because my job is to recruit and bring the best players in here so we have the best chance of winning. And you'll be a part of a winning program. And that's what I did. And that's what the coaches tried. And I instilled that in them in our staff meetings. That whatever position group you coach, I want you to go out and find somebody better. And, you know, in some cases you can't, but you have the best player in America. But you tell them all as a group. So the word gets through their heads that this is what our goal is.
Yeah. All right, Coach. Well, good stuff. We appreciate all the insights, and we appreciate everyone listening and all of the questions. Thanks for sending those in, and keep them coming. We want some topics for the off season. So what do you want us to talk about? Anything and anything, you know, everything and everything about USC Trojan football. We will do our best to get to that. Oh, I wanted to mention one more thing. I forgot to do this, Coach. USC did, the athletic department won the Crosstown Cup, defeating rival UCLA. So, you know, that's the head-to-head, sports competition with the Bruins. So USC won it for the 12th time in, 19 years. So it definitely helps sweeping UCLA in basketball and beating UCLA in football. So those are some of the big point items, but, congrats to the athletic department on, beating UCLA.
That's great. That's great. I saw that the beach volleyball team got beat by UCLA, but they got a number 2 seed. And, they're both 1-2 in the country. So that's a great environment out here on the West Coast. They have great beach volleyball teams. So we'll see what happens with that one, too.
Yeah, we'll see where that ends up. Some teams trying to get championships. I think the water polo team as well. We'll keep you up to date on what's going on with that at uscfootball.com. But Coach, thanks again for coming on. We love talking to you.
Thank you very much. And I hope I'm not too hard on everybody out there. It's just when you want to talk hardcore football and what the game of football is about, I'm one of those guys to tell you the way it is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know, what happens behind the closed doors and what my philosophy is as far as what the game is all about. So, and I'll tell you one thing. Our student athletes loved it. They loved to know where they stood. They loved to know what it took to win. And they challenged themselves to do their best to do that. And that's all you can ask them to do.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the Coach Harvey Hyde. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thanks so much for listening. And we will talk to you next time.
The Rose Bowl Legacy Foundation preserves, protects, and enhances the future of the Rose Bowl Stadium as a National Historic Landmark. America's Stadium has hosted 2 Olympic Games, with a third one coming in 2028, 2 World Cup Finals, 5 Super Bowls, and the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl, since 1923. It is the epic center of college football and is the most iconic stadium in the world. To learn more about how you can support the Rose Bowl Stadium as it turns 100 years young, visit www.inspire2022.org.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest 3 words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.